The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the ESPN FC studios in today's edition of the show. I'm Sebastian Salazar. We're going to be joined a little bit by Craig Burley for a good old yelling match about Liverpool and Spurs yesterday. But we'll start with Thursday's match of the day in the Premier League. Manchester United visiting Sheffield United, where they get a 3-2 win, a win that sees Manchester United move up to sixth in the table. A couple goals for Marcus Rashford, one for Anthony Martial. For more, we're joined by Don Hutchison, Shaka Hislop, and Steve Nichol. Don, I'll start with you. Manchester United never better than when they go down a goal early, huh?
It's incredible, huh? Six times now they've done it, a record in the Premier League. They took a couple of punches in the face very early on. In fact, they should have been 2-0 behind. John Fleck had a great chance where he should have made it 2-0. But they were well worth the 3 points tonight. I think the scoreline in the end slightly flatters Sheffield United. Man U bossed the second half. They took control of the game. They started creating some really good chances. A little bit nervy towards the end, but they got the job done.
Stevie, what did you make of the Manchester United performance? Specifically, Paul Pogba had an assist on the second goal, critical in the third goal as well, and got the start.
Well, we know that Pogba's got ability. And when you give him space and time, and you have a high back line, that tries to stay high when there's no pressure on the ball, then somebody with his talent and brains is going to hurt you. And, you know, a couple of great balls in behind. And generally, Pogba looked like the Pogba we thought Man United were getting. But he's not going to get the time and space that he got today from most other teams in the Premier League. But, hey, we always say, you can only play well regardless of the opposition. And, Manchester United, I agree with Dom. Definitely deserved the 3 points. And Pogba was good, yes.
Shaka, Dean Henderson gets the start today in place of David De Gea. Has a howler on the opening goal for Sheffield United. What'd you make of his performance, both from that goal and then after it, his response?
Well, started off shakily, as you rightly point out, Seb, but I thought kind of gathered himself and played pretty well from then on in. Listen, I think Sheffield United, given how well they know Dean Henderson, maybe figured that was something they could find some joy from in the first set piece, boxing him in, now allowing him to leave his line and then closing him down when seemingly in comfortable possession. To make that bigger howler that early on in a game that would mean as much to him emotionally, it's tough, but I thought from then on in, he equipped himself well. Nothing he could do about the second goal. Made a very good save late on for United to keep hold of all 3 points. So all in all, happy. Just fix his start, please.
We have talked a lot on this show, Don, about the inconsistency in the players at Manchester United. But today, you look at a guy like Anthony Martial, great game, gets the goal, and Marcus Rashford. It's cliche to say it at this point, but so electric in the open field.
Yeah, the kid's different class. Everything that he does on and off the pitch. But tonight, he was world class. His first goal was just incredible. Long ball from Lindelof over the top. As Stevie said, Sheffield United high line. So when you analyse that from a Sheffield United point of view, Chrissy Wilder won't be happy. But as he judges the flight of the ball and the pace that's on it, he just watches it come over his right shoulder. And the first touch that he makes, you know, just cushioning that first touch, a feather-like touch, sets himself right into his stride as well. It doesn't even have to break stride. Then a beautiful strike. And then his second goal of the game I think Dean Henderson should have done a lot better. Aaron Ramsdale should have done a lot better when he sort of scuffed. But it was a very, very good move, a fluent move, all the big boys involved. Scruffy finish in the end, but his performance was sensational.
Stevie, if you look at the table here, Manchester United in sixth with a game in hand. If they were to win that game in hand, they'd be as high as second. Right now, they're ahead of Chelsea. They're ahead of Manchester City. But we spend a lot of time on this show criticizing this team. For all that, have we been a little bit too harsh when you look at their actual spot in the table?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think the one thing we have done here in this show is when they've played well, we've said they've played well. And when they've been rotten, we've said they've been rotten. Now, unfortunately for them, it's a toss of a coin what they're going to be. They're either going to be really, really good, and we can talk nice things about them and talk about Pogba, how good he is, and we can talk about how world-class Rashford is, and we can say all these nice things. But at the same time, when they're just rotten, we have to do the same. So when you look at the table and you look what possibly, or the position they possibly could be in, it seems amazing, as bad as they've been at times this year, how the world could end up as high as they could.
Don, it does seem amazing.
Except beyond that form as well. I mean, that's how inconsistent they've been. When you look at Man United's away form in the form table, they're sitting top. Away form, they're fourth bottom. So that tells you how inconsistent this United side is.
Shaka?
Here's the other thing to Man United, as we've seen this season. I think, yes, absolutely right. Given some of their performances and some of the criticism they've received from us, it is surprising to be talking about a United team that could potentially be sitting in second. But you've seen the best of Manchester United against the likes of Sheffield United, against West Ham a couple of weeks ago, where I thought they were simply outstanding. But when you compare United and their record against the other teams who, well, if you want to look, if you compare them to the teams that finished in the top eight last season, we always have these little mini tables at the top of the table. United actually haven't fared well against the traditional better teams in the league. They've had good results against Everton, against Southampton this season, who are up there. But against the Leicester, Wolves, Spurs, the top eight from last season, I think they've played four games and have picked up 2 points from those four games. That speaks a lot to maybe their failings against who you expect to be the better teams. I say who you expect because I realize exactly where City and Arsenal are right now.
Don, is it worth putting an asterisk, given some context to this Manchester United performance, given it came against a Sheffield United team that has 1 point so far this season?
No, I think I think their performance was good. I think the overall performance was good. As the guy said, after a shaky start, and they always seem to lose a goal, which is terrible. It's something that they've got to fix because you can't keep doing that. You can't keep giving away goals and coming back and getting away with it. But I thought their performance in general was good because in the second half, even though people might look at the scoreline and think it's 3-2, well, that must have been a close one. They still created some really good chances. Martial had a big chance in the second half. Greenwood had one. Wan Mata had another. Wan-Bissaka was making good moves into the box. And a better ball from him would have had a Bruno Fernandes tap in. So I think when Ollie analyses the performance, there'll be bits where you can say they can improve for sure. But that performance was much better than what I've seen away from home for quite a while, I think.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it there. Plenty more from the boys on today's edition of Extra Time. We take your tweets and answer them one by one.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Liverpool 2-1 winners over Spurs on Wednesday at Anfield to go top of the table. So much of the discussion around this match would happen afterwards between Jose Mourinho and Jurgen Klopp. Here's what Mourinho says he said. Quote, I told Jurgen the best team lost, and he disagreed. Stevie and Don are back with us. Craig Burley joins the show as well. Stevie, I'll start with you. Your reaction to Jose Mourinho's comments. Did he get it right?
Absolute nonsense. You having a laugh? You got ridiculously outpossessed. You had less than 30% of the ball. The opposition had more shots than you. The opposition scored more goals than you. And every single which way you want to look at this, the opposition that you were playing against were better than you. But the best team lost? Give me a break. I mean, nobody believes that. Not even Tottenham fans believe that nonsense. You know, he keeps coming up with this. You know, his last one was, we controlled the game without the ball. Well, I'll tell you what, they did a great job of controlling this game because they never smelt the ball. Never mind had the ball. Absolute nonsense.
Craig, you were pretty complimentary of Spurs on yesterday's show. It's hard to make the case that you were the better team when you had 23% possession.
Yeah, and can I just firstly say, Seb, it is an absolute pleasure here to make my first ever appearance on Liverpool TV. I don't know what the fee is, but to be honest,
what are you talking about? I don't know what Robbie. What are you talking about, Craig? Have you lost the plot?
I mean, absolutely.
The best team won this game, so don't listen. If you stuck two sets of strips that were different than the ones they had on, and that's somebody who the best team was, it would be. Come on, don't give me that Liverpool TV rubbish.
No, listen, I'm not. You haven't let me make my. You haven't let me answer the question about the best team. I don't agree with that because clearly Liverpool are the best team in the country and have been for what now, 18 months. And before that, they were neck and neck with City the season before it went all the way. So clearly they are the best team in the country at the moment. There is not a doubt about that. But the one thing that I would say, and you said they didn't have, you know, they didn't have any possession, they didn't have any, you know, Liverpool had more shots and all that, and I get that. But that's not to be, you're not surprised by that, but let me ask you something. Should Tottenham in the second half been 3-1 up?
No. Well, Helly, I'll tell you what then. I'm not going to turn around and say they didn't have two great chances, right? There's a reason why you reset 9 saves. So if you want, I can start talking about how Mo Salah in particular, his shots that he actually got through should have been placed better. If you want to start playing the ifs, ands and buts game, then I can play that with you. But the fact is, you're not playing it very well
because Bergwijn had the two best chances in the game, right? It's as simple as that. You know, Liverpool scored with a deflected goal and they had the Mane chance, which was from a tight angle that hit the crossbar. But look at the nodding heads of Liverpool TV. Bergwijn had the two best chances.
By the way, Mane's chance was a better chance than the one you the first one Bergwijn had. So don't say that. I could argue that Mane should have scored and not hit the crossbar. He'd have had a better chance than Bergwijn's first one.
Tell me something. I'm not arguing about possession or who's the best team. I'm saying in the second half, Tottenham should have been 3-1 up. Did Bergwijn have the two best chances of the second half? Yes or
could
no?
Have.
No.
But it could also have been the couple down. Liverpool could have scored more goals before they had the chances. Well, it suits
you
because it was 1-1. I could throw back at you that Liverpool should have done better with the shots that they actually got through on Lloris.
And then, those two chances would have been defunct. Somebody tell me.
No one.
Tell you
no
what.
No one. Liverpool could have had a penalty. Eric Dyer handball. Sadio Mane hits the crossbar.
Oh, Don, sorry,
the directive is above the t-shirt now, above the shirt.
No, don't give us that. It hit him in the arm. It never hit him in the shoulder. It hit him in the arm. It hit him where the t-shirt ended, which is the arm. So don't try and talk
no,
your way
listen,
out that one.
Before you but take on this programme, you should Bergwijn get up to speed with the directives because you're going to have to backtrack here because the sleeve is... the directive ever hits the sleeve now, it's not a penalty kick.
Hit the sleeve.
Hey, what have you got long sleeves on? I've got long sleeves on. Does that not count?
It didn't hit the arm. It hit closer at the shoulder. I mean, you two are an embarrassment tonight. Stephen Bergwijn had the two best opportunities in the second half. It should have been 3-1.
Or was it closer to the shoulder?
Craig, how have you been sucked in here? How have you been
sucked in? Tell me how you've been sucked in.
You have Jose sucked you in.
Right, I'm going to ask you a question, Don. Give me a straight answer.
Here we go.
If they had somebody with a bit of composure, they had the two best chances in the second half, should they have been 3-1 up? Yes or no?
No, but that's hypothetical.
The very man who says, if you even smell the word F, he goes,
That's what
F
I'm
this,
saying. All
F
I'm
that,
saying
F
is, this great Liverpool side that you two clearly are on board with, should have been 3-1 down if Bergwijn had any finishing skills.
Nobody's arguing. Hey, listen, nobody's arguing that Tottenham on the break, that's what they're all about. Nobody's arguing that. And Son's goal was great. He took it well. And Kane's fantastic as well. And you know what?
Brilliant.
You
you're agreeing with me.
The fact is,
you're agreeing with me.
I'm not. What are you talking about? You can't go clean your ears out. I said,
Tottenham are excellent on the break. That's what I
they're
said
good
last night.
On the break. Well, if you'd let me finish.
Craig, if you want to go through what the potential scoreline could have been, it could have been 5-4 to Liverpool. But you're not remembering Liverpool's chances. You don't remember Salah in the first half, scuffing a few. You don't remember Curtis Jones having a run where he had two shots where he actually could have scored. One of them was an easy finish. Bottom right-hand corner, he scuffed it. You're forgetting Sadio Mane hit the crossbar. And you're forgetting the penalty claim. And the two goals that Liverpool scored.
Listen. Take the goggles off. Did Tottenham have the two best chances of second half? Yes or no?
No, they didn't. Bergwijn had one good chance where he should have scored one.
Two. By the way, Tottenham were so good. Tottenham were so good
chances.
Defensively that they lost
two
goals. And Liverpool had 11 shots on Lloris. That's how good defensively they were. Yeah, we're going to defend.
And I tell you another thing.
I tell you another thing about your great manager, and you're moaning and groaning about
substitutions, player welfare, fixtures, TV companies, when games are scheduled. How many subs did he make last night?
I don't care.
None.
Well, they're talking
about
your clock.
Do you know what? Do you know
I don't like listening to him moan either. I don't like listening to him moan either. That's not what I'm arguing about.
I can't believe this is even a discussion.
The best team lost.
Listen, I'm not arguing the best team won. Tottenham are not the best team. All I'm saying is they opened Liverpool up on two occasions at the back, and the two best chances done, two, not one. Mm-hmm. And if Bergwijn had anything about him in the final third, Liverpool would have been chasing their tails. It's 3-1. That's why Mourinho was frustrated. Mourinho knows they're not the best team. He was frustrated that Tottenham didn't take those chances and ask the questions of Liverpool. I'm not sitting here arguing about who was the better team. Liverpool were and are the better team. I'm saying Tottenham let them off the hook with the chances that they missed. That was my point in last night's show.
But so did Liverpool, Craig. So did Liverpool. Liverpool had good chances.
Liverpool didn't have the chances as good as Tottenham had. Liverpool's were half chances. Mane's was a good one at the end, but the angle
was tight. Their chances were better than our chances.
I don't know how much to pay here on Liverpool TV, but I'm happy to come on and argue with you. Right?
It was Spurs TV last night with Jurgen. Jurgen got sucked in. Frank was having a nibble.
I'm not Spurs TV. I'm not Chelsea TV. I'm not Liverpool TV. I just do TV, right? And if you can't recognise Tottenham should have been 3-1 up and Liverpool got away with that, then I don't know what you're watching.
We'll leave it there. We could have this argument for 100 more years, clearly.
Honestly, take the Liverpool...
Nobody's saying they didn't have two good chances.
...wearing an Ian Rush shirt and you having a Liverpool scarf on.
Nobody's saying they didn't have two good chances. You're just getting carried away with this nonsense. All could have been, should have been.
Craig, you're talking like the Tottenham chances in the second half, which were very good chances. One was better than the other when he hit the post. You're talking like Liverpool created zero chances.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying Tottenham had the best chances. Had they taken them, open chances, one-on-ones, not shots from the edge of the box.
Had.
Tottenham had eight or nine defenders between Liverpool and Lloris. I'm talking about one-on-ones.
All right, gentlemen.
One-on-ones.
We're chasing our tails.
With Alisson, clear-cut. That's getting away with it when that happens.
We're chasing our tails. Let's move on.
Do you know
on.
The problem is, Seb, just quickly?
Yes.
Those two just can't accept that there's another way to play football and Jose Mourinho has got this sports side organised.
We don't talk rubbish.
Not great to watch.
I've set my team up to do the same thing. Rubbish. You're talking
look
rubbish
at him.
Now.
Look at him. Rev, he can't stand
the
Mourinho.
Set up a load
out.
Of times to play that way. Don't give it this. There's only one way to play.
Listen, just be honest. You don't like Mourinho.
Yeah, right.
And it's blinding you.
Yeah, that's
putting
it.
Putting you the blinders on.
No, Stevie, don't bite. Don't bite, because I want to ask you about...
I'm just laughing at him. I can't believe...
He's bitten the whole show. Look at his face. Look how red
he is. You're going to get a letter from Tottenham.
Could have
Mr. Bradley, can you do Spurs TV in your days off?
Okay.
We can do it from your house. You don't have to travel.
Stevie, Liverpool TV question here. Curtis Jones, you've talked about how the young guys have to be able to match what the old guys are doing. I mean, you have to be surprised by the level that he's brought into this team.
Oh, here we go. It'll be a five-minute eulogy here. My God.
Then take you say break, he's rubbish, right? Yeah.
Wake me up when this is over.
Have a glass of water. Calm down.
Oh, gee, God.
Have a night off, Craig. Come back tomorrow.
I tell you what, throw in. Hey, Sam,
I didn't ask you about Curtis Jones. I asked Stevie about Curtis Jones.
Do you know what? I'm going to say nothing with Curtis Jones. Anybody who wants to see him, just go watch this game. Just watch how good he is. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
He doesn't need me to say anything.
He is good. Sebby. Just watch how good Liverpool are.
His play says it all.
Just watch.
His play says it all.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. We will leave it there. If you want any more on Liverpool Spurs, and I can't imagine you would after that, make sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. The boys talking all about Klopp v. Mourinho.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What a year it's been for Robert Lewandowski. Wraps it up, finishing first in FIFA's voting for the best male player of 2020. Lucy Bronze of England, Manchester City, winning the award on the women's side. We welcome back Shaka, Don, and Steve Nichol for some more analysis on this. Stevie, Robert Lewandowski, there was really only one choice, wasn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Playing for the best team, playing for a dominant team, and not just, you know, obviously scoring goals is his business. That's his job. That's what he's there for. But when you look at all his other all-round play as well, I mean, he's absolutely phenomenal. You talk about can play as an old-fashioned centre-forward when needed, can come short and play people in if needed. I mean, just basically does it all and took Bayern to every trophy possible. So, yeah, it was really clear for me anyway that Lewandowski should win this.
Lewandowski then also featuring in the FIFA Pro 11. Let's run through it real quick. Wow, look at that front three. Messi, Lewandowski, Cristiano. Then you got a midfield of KDB, Thiago, and Kimmich across the back. Davies, Ramos, Virgil van Dijk, Trent Alexander-Arnold. Alisson getting the choice over Manuel Neuer. There is the top goalie in the FIFA Pro 11. All right, from the FIFA Pro 11, we move to something only slightly less controversial. Shaka Hislop's power rankings, and we've got a new team installed at number one. Shaka, walk us through it.
That team is Bayer Leverkusen, top of the Bundesliga. They, in their last 15 games, 13 wins and a draw. That's form that will see atop of even these power rankings. Number two, Liverpool. All right, disappointed against Fulham, but you bounce back against Spurs. That's good enough for me. Bayern Munich, back to their winning ways after a little stumble for them, three. RB Leipzig, who can't stop winning all of a sudden, they're into four. Inter Milan at five. Never mind what's happening in Champions League. In the league, they've been good. They can't stop winning undefeated
in
2 months.
Out. They were so good. Yes. They were so good, they're not even in Europa League.
Never mind that. That's so they could focus on Serie A.
Where they're behind the team that's behind them in your power ranking, Shaka.
He said it was there. That's what they were trying to do so they could focus on the league. And they're doing a good job. Then there's AC Milan at six. They had two draws. They drew the last two games, AC. I mean, there's only so much love I could show as Zlatan left AC Milan. Juventus is at seven. Spurs. Never mind, you lost against Liverpool, but you're still in the power rankings. Cheer up.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you lose either.
Yeah, as long as you're in the power rankings, it's okay. Glasgow Rangers in at nine.
Higher.
They lost in the cup, Scottish Cup, but I'm still
showing them
love. I'm not hearing Don complaining. All of a sudden, Don's gone quiet. And then Lyon, I know they're third in Ligue 1, but they haven't lost a game in 3 months. Conceded a late penalty, controversially late penalty against Brest to draw, but I'm showing them some love. Lyon in a 10. That's it.
How can
Only
Rangers
Stevie can find fault
how
and not
can Rangers,
really.
Jack? How can Rangers have not lost a game right across Europe, right across Scotland, right across anywhere for the whole of the season apart from a Scottish Cup the other day, only be ninth?
That last sentence, how can Rangers not lose it apart from the Scottish Cup?
Because he probably rested
I know Steven Gerrard made, four or five changes, but you lost, so you're going to get a little bit of a knock.
And Milan are behind Inter, but Milan are top of the league.
Yeah, but it's, Milan drew their last two games, Dom. It's a form table.
It's present form, right? It's present form. So that's why Rangers dropped, right? That's all you got to say. I'm helping you here, Jack.
Well, thanks, Steve. I was a little bit sceptical when you helped me out like this. Hope you understand now. Something's coming. I'm waiting for the butt.
No, I'm helping you.
No,
I like it.
Time.
I think it's a good
cheers,
job.
TV.
I wouldn't mind your travel miles either.
Thank you.
All right, Bayer Leverkusen then claiming the top spot in Schalke's power rankings, as they are for now anyway, atop the Bundesliga. Great stuff, guys. Plenty more on tomorrow's edition of ESPN FC as we look forward to the weekend.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Quick look at the Bundesliga table as we head towards the weekend. Dortmund actually opens the action on Friday as they visit Union Berlin. Tough place to play, we know that, because Bayern Munich dropped some points there over the weekend. Of course, the big game this weekend, Saturday, Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich showdown between the top two teams in the table. For more, let's welcome in Casey Keller, Bundesliga veteran. Let's put that Bayern Munich-Leverkusen game off to the side for just a second and start with Dortmund. We got our first look at Dortmund in the Edin Terzic era, a 2-1 win against Werder Bremen on Tuesday. Did you notice any difference from what we've seen over the last couple weeks under Lucien Favre?
I think the only thing is maybe a little bit more concentration on defending. It was a tough match. Werder Bremen, much better this season. They made things very difficult for Borussia Dortmund. You know, even Terzic said in the post game, you know, you're not really going to wave a magic wand and everything just gets perfectly better overnight. It's going to take some time. And I still believe that that cutting edge up front that Erling Haaland gave them is still missing. And if he's not back till January, they're going to seriously have to try to find ways to score the goals in bunches that they did before, because I just don't think this team is set up to defensively just grind out wins. Now, they did an excellent job. They found a way to get a win against Werder Bremen, and I feel for Pavlenka. He had a very good game and goal for Werder Bremen, and then, you know, unfortunately caused the penalty, which ultimately gave Dortmund the win after he saved the penalty that he caused. So, yeah, it frustrated for Werder Bremen, but Dortmund needed 3 points, and they found it.
Casey, you always wonder what the bump is going to be like after a new manager comes in. Interesting quote from Marco Reus after the game on Terzic. He said, he gave us a belief we're a good team. My question to you is, are they really a good team? And by that, are they really good enough to now lock in and make it a true title race with Bayern Munich?
I don't think so right now. I was worried about, before the season even started, kind of the athleticism of Dortmund defensively, that when they came against some of the teams, and that they would be exposed. And go back to the Stuttgart match, which eventually got Favre fired. Stuttgart is extremely athletic going forward, and it really exposed Dortmund, particularly a team that loves possession, loves to push a bunch of numbers forward, and if they gave possession away the way they did, the athleticism of Stuttgart really exposed that Dortmund defense. Now, I know Hummels isn't the most athletic right now, but he's going to probably miss a game or two, at least with a hamstring issue, which will put more pressure on an already fragile defense.
Dortmund gets the win on Tuesday. So does Bayern Munich, 2-1 over Wolfsburg. But Casey, it really wasn't easy. Wolfsburg gets an early goal. They outshoot Bayern Munich. This one came down like quite a few matches for Bayern Munich have of late. Manuel Neuer really, really saving the bacon.
Yeah, this was really a match of two players. And you talk about Lewandowski scoring goals at one end and Neuer keeping them out at the other. And it is. I mean, it's so much of in the past, I think, go back 3 or 4 years. And I really felt that Manuel Neuer at times was bored in goal. Bayern were so dominant, and he put himself in strange positions because I thought he was just back there twiddling his thumbs wanting to do something. Well, the way Bayern's been playing this season in particular, he's not bored. They're conceding goals, and they're conceding goals not because he's in poor form. They're conceding goals because the opposition is getting lots of opportunities. And so, yes, Lewandowski popped up, scored two typical great Lewandowski goals. But if it hadn't have been for Neuer in the final 5-10 minutes, they would have dropped points. And so this is why this matchup against Leverkusen is going to be so fun on Saturday, because Leverkusen are the really informed side, the team that is solid defensively but still scoring goals and fun to watch, but they haven't necessarily, in my opinion, been tested against the better teams in the Bundesliga yet this year. And so I think this is where we're going to find out if Leverkusen are for real, or are Bayern maybe not as strong as we've seen in the recent past due to, you know, fixture congestion, injuries, you know, the list goes on.
Casey, one more thing on Manuel Neuer. He earns FIFA's the best award as the world's best goalie today. The FIFA Pro 11 also comes out. That has Alisson in it as the best goalie. You know, there are, you know, different groups that vote on that. But if you had your choice between the two today, who you taking?
I mean, I'm probably taking Neuer just briefly, but just, you know, minusculely. But probably if you'd asked me this question at the same time last year, then I probably would have picked Alisson. And I know how sometimes this voting goes. It goes by kind of who's in the recent form and who's in the spotlight and what's happening, because it is, or sometimes, you know, that vote goes, it happened 3-4 months ago, and it's just the matter of time when they finally tally it and make it public. So the part for me that I kind of laugh is you have two great goalkeepers, you have two different groups, and it's a way that both groups can respect what each player has done, give them each an award, because both are thoroughly deserving.
All right, let's talk Leverkusen. Let's talk Bayern Munich. Every time, every week, we always say we want a title race in the Bundesliga. Yet, whenever there's a question asked of Bayern Munich, the other teams just don't have the answers. What are you seeing from this Leverkusen side that you say, yeah, they might have the answer on Saturday?
I see a team. You know, I mean, they're not a group of superstar individuals that you would see in a Bayern Munich, or kind of the young stars that you're seeing come out of Dortmund. You're seeing a group that is just playing very well together. And I'm excited to see them against the stars. I'm excited to see how poorly Bayern have been defending over this season, and can Leverkusen exploit that? And then at the same time, as you mentioned, Seb, and rightfully so, when Bayern gets pushed, they always seem to have an extra gear, and nobody then has been able to compete. And I'm interested to see if that extra gear is just too tired for Bayern right now to be able to step up. And is Leverkusen the real deal? Now, don't get me wrong. I think with a much shorter winter break, but the squad size, everything that Bayern Munich has in its favor, if they can get through Christmas, get some bodies fit, maybe bring in a reinforcement or two, I still believe they're going to win, their ninth or tenth title in a row.
That's right. We don't even count them anymore. Casey, thank you very much. It's number one versus number two in the Bundesliga this weekend. Of course, a match that you can catch on ESPN+. Plenty more Bundesliga coverage over on our website. Derek Ray with an interesting article on Borussia Dortmund and their new manager. Make sure to check it out.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
RB Leipzig just 1 point off the lead in the Bundesliga, and they're going to get a big boost for the new year. Leipzig have signed Dominik Szoboszlai, the 20-year-old Hungarian midfielder from Red Bull Salzburg. They're going to pay 20 million euros, and he'll join the team in January. He's been linked all over Europe. Arsenal, among the many teams that have been interested in his services. Of note, he will be Champions League eligible for Leipzig and the round of 16. All right, that'll do it for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to those who stopped by, Hercules Gomez, Casey Keller, and Craig Burley. Now, though, what you've been waiting for, extra time. Stevie, Shaka, and Don, take your questions. Enjoy. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the ESPN FC studios. In this Thursday edition of Extra Time, we have your tweets, and we have a trio ready to answer them. Don, Shaka, Stevie with us. First question for you. Steve, your response to the below stats. Liverpool had 100% accuracy from their 18 throw-ins against Tottenham. 94% accuracy for the season. Of course, as Stevie, a longtime admirer of Liverpool's throw-in.
No, I think the throwing coach has done a fantastic job, clearly, with those centre stats. So, yes, 100% wrong. I was 100% wrong. Fantastic.
Can't argue with 100%. It's all right there. Next question. I know Mourinho is not Mr. Perfect, but he has a point about Klopp's sideline antics, doesn't he? Mourinho would be slaughtered if he acted like that. Don, what do you think?
I think he's sort of got a point, Jose. I think so. I think...
What does Klopp do that upsets you?
Say again, Sebby?
What does Klopp do that upsets people so much? He's animated? He works the officials?
No, I think Jose's making the point. If Jose acted like Jurgen, I think probably Jose thinks he probably would be sidelined or benched or sent off. I don't necessarily agree with him. I wouldn't go the whole way there, but I think he's trying to compare himself with Jurgen. And Jurgen's been on the pitch, you know, hugging Alisson. In the derby last season, he's quite vocal towards the fourth officials, and he slightly gets away with it. I get where Jose's coming from, but it's just Jose being Jose. He's looking for an angle. Right. He's probably looking to try and deflect away from the loss.
Yeah, they've met 12 times. Mourinho's only won two of those meetings. I'm sure it wasn't sour grapes, right, Shaka?
That aside, right? Their head-to-head record aside, what Jose is saying there makes no sense. The only aspect of it that resonates or makes any kind of sense is that it's distracting from a Spurs team who again had 25% possession and lost against Liverpool. That's the only thing that makes sense about this. But Jose, everything that Jurgen Klopp does on the sidelines, at some point in his career, Jose Mourinho has done and done an awful lot more of. Even if it is to be criticized, Jose Mourinho is not the one to be doing that criticism or asking people to criticize Jurgen Klopp for doing what he's done his entire career doing and a whole lot more, might I add.
Stevie, what do you make of it all?
I think the benches are far too close together. It's not changing. Listen, There's nothing worse when you're coaching and you've got the guy in the other dugout and you're only 10 foot apart and he's shouting and bawling and screaming, and it gets right on your nerves, let me tell you, and I'm being kind. So I'm not a big fan of it. I prefer the old style where you had a proper dugout, you were out the road, and you could lose your temper and kick the wall or do whatever, and you were out the road. But unfortunately today, you can't do anything because you are 10 yards from each other. You're standing right out where every single person can see anything you do, and there's always a camera on you. So I think it's unfortunate, but I kind of probably agree with Don. It's just Mourinho being Mourinho, but personally, I think they're too close together, the dugouts.
Has there been a trend with the big teams in Europe to be more defensive? Real Madrid, Man City, Spurs, Liverpool, etc. seem to be more pragmatic than they were 18 months ago. Don, it's interesting. We've talked about this on the show. We've had so many big games that just didn't live up to the hype. What do you think?
I think that's a fair question. I think it's fair. I think Liverpool are trying to be the ones that I don't think Liverpool ever played defensive. They might not be in great form. But I think, like I said, Real Madrid and Barca, they're going through some sort of transition. Man City in the Champions League, that was really bizarre. That was a strange game that they played. I think it was against Lyon where, you know, Pep's tactics have always been, well, we might concede one, but we'll score four or five. In that game, he went ultra defensive. He was petrified. And it went against the grain. You know, he was trying to go for a 0-0 in a 90-minute game because it wasn't a two-legged affair. And I think when Pep looks back at that, and Man City fans look back at that game, it was the one that got away because, all right, Lyon are in decent form and probably could have scored a goal, but you'd fancy Man City if Pep had a went for it to score three, four or five. So I think there is a little bit of a trend, but I think we'll probably shift away from that. I think once fans get back in the stadium, I think we'll go away from that. But to bring Liverpool into it, I think slightly unfair.
Good friend of the program, Nick, sends in our next question. What is your take on the red card for Lorenzo Insigne on Wednesday? Are red cards warranted for cussing out a referee? Of course, he was sent off for profanity used as a referee. Gattuso has come out and said, hey, in England, they curse out the referees all the time. Shouldn't be getting sent off for it. What do you think, Stevie? Is that worth getting a red card?
What is that old saying, when in Rome? So if you're playing in England, then you can swear at the ref. Right. But if you know you can't swear at the ref in Italy, then don't swear at the ref. I mean, it's kind of a stupid thing to say.
Is it true, Stevie? Is it true you just get away with more in England?
Well, listen, interactions with referees are all about one thing, and it's how you do it. If you want to run up to him at 100 mile an hour, straight in his face and swear at him, then you're going to get a red card or a card. You know, if you're getting on well with him and you have a wee sly word with a smile on your face, then you get away with things. It's about being clever. It's about how you get away with it. So that's basically what it's down to. So, and again, if you can't do that, if you can't be clever and smart and do that with Italian referees, then stay at the road.
Shaka, you're Mr. IFAB. What do you think? Is profanity worthy of a caution and eventually a sending off?
I think, like so many things in football and particularly refereeing, it's down to a cultural difference. We were having this discussion a couple of weeks ago with the player who backheeled the ball over the line with the empty goal. It's a cultural difference. I lived in England. I understand how people related to each other off the field and how on the field it wasn't seen as being, you know, certainly not red cardable. I can't speak to how people relate to each other culturally in Italy because I've never spent any time there. But as Stevie says, if you know you can't do that in Italian football, then don't. And you know, you can't call another culture as a reference to some kind of a defense.
Don, has there been a club during your playing days that you were unable to beat despite playing against them many times? A bogey team, so to say.
Yeah, you always have them. You have grounds, especially in the Premier League, where you go to, and some are quite nice, and some, you know, Tottenham was a ground that I used to love going to, could play well there and score goals there, and the atmosphere was great, beautiful stadium. There was one or two where you just had nightmares. Coventry used to be Highfield Road, was a ground I went there and never had good memories. Southampton, the Dell was another one. You have these sort of grounds where you go there and you just think, oh, playing there again, I never play well there, I get sent off there, never seem to win there. But you have more, I think, that you enjoy and you can't wait to get to, rather than the two or three that you just in utter despair when you realise that fixture's coming up.
Shaka, how about you?
For me, the club was always Wimbledon. Because they were so physical, you knew you'd get beaten to a pulp whenever you played them. I just can't seem to think of any good results we had against them at all. Actually, thinking back to my first season at West Ham, 98-99, we started the season really well. I think we'd won like three or four games on the spin. I hadn't conceded a single goal up to that point. We played Wimbledon, as I say, I can't remember if it was the fourth or fifth game of the season. We three up after half an hour. We lose the game 4-3. No matter what, and that wasn't the crazy gang Wimbledon. I just couldn't. That they were my bogey team.
Our next question comes from somebody who very clearly follows the show and writes down everything that anyone on it has ever said. Don, do you still believe Messi won his power play and will get 40 to 50 goals this season? On September 4th, you eulogized about it for 15 plus minutes, says Nicholas.
Well, I still believe he won the power play. I don't think I said he scored 40 to 50 goals.
Check the tape.
I just thought...
huh? I said, check the tape. We're not actually going to check the tape. We'll take
it. No, I wouldn't say he scored 40 to 50, but he won the power play. That was obvious. Mm-hmm. You know, the president that he didn't get on with ended up leaving a couple of days later. That was always going to happen. The next power play will be exactly what I said, so you can check the tape, and Ronald Koeman won't be there this time next season. It'll probably be Xavi that'll be in charge with a brand new president in place. So, I never really thought that Messi was ever going to leave Barca, even though I hear from people in the know and good sources said it came very, very close, and Messi going to Man City apparently was really, really close. But in terms of shifting the president on, I think he won that.
All right, so December 17th then, for Nicholas, you can mark it down as when Don told you that Messi would win the power play and will be back next season with a new manager in charge. Final question, Frank McManaman, another frequent contributor here. Who was the most injury-prone player that you ever played with? What was the strangest way that you recall them getting injured? Stevie?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Do you know, there's a kid comes to mind who unfortunately is not with us anymore, and his name was Wayne Harrison, and Liverpool signed him for £300,000 in the mid-80s from Oldham, and he was a striker. As I said, 17. And any time he even got close to getting near the first team, something happened. He would do his calf, and then that would knock him back. And then he ended up doing his knee, and then he would get fit again, and then he would get in the squad, and then he would do his other knee, and then, I mean, things just kept happening to him. And actually, the strangest one was he almost lost his arm. He was on pre-season training when Phil Thompson was in charge of the reserves, and almost lost his arm. He fell through a glass door, and as I said, it sliced half his arm off. And he just fortunately managed to get in the hospital in time, and he saved his arm. So that was strange, but Wayne just could never get a break.
Wow. That one's going to be tough to beat. Don, how's your memory?
I can't beat that. And I was actually at Liverpool with Wayne Harrison.
No.
What a player. Mine would probably be a lad called Danny Williamson, who I played at West Ham and Everton. And he had plantar fascia in the soles of his feet. And really bizarrely, he could put trainers on and he could run around the training ground and he could join in like games of head tennis and that sort of stuff. But the minute he tried to put a pair of football boots on, he was in so much pain on the soles of his feet, he couldn't literally take steps. It was like treading on broken glass. And then he'd come back in for treatment, he'd put some trainers on, he'd go out for a run, everything's fine. In the end, you're sort of thinking he's making this up. And it took him so long, and so much surgery and so many scars and loads of scar tissue, and he just about came back in the end, but he struggled for a good 2.5 years, I think.
Wow. Shaka.
I can't match any. I can't think of I can't think of any players I played with. One, I remember, speaking of strange injuries, is Dave Besson, the goalkeeper who, I'm sure everybody knows this story. He's at home one day, taking something out of his cupboard in his kitchen, and a bottle falls. He tries to control the bottle before it hits the ground and smashes a bone in his foot or some stuff, and he is out for weeks. That is as bizarre an injury as I have heard of. But other than that, I can't match any of those.
What? Catch it?
Well, I don't know. What are you asking me? He's reaching up, knocks a bottle down, decides I'm going to control it. He's out for 6 weeks.
Catch it. Of course he couldn't catch it. Don't be daft.
He's a keeper.
That's good. Well, the foot skills didn't exactly. work out too well either. All right, we'll leave it there, gentlemen, for today. Thank you very much. That's Stevie, Don, and Shaka. Thanks for sending us your tweets here on Extra Time. We will be back tomorrow with plenty more fun.